Hello, a short story by Jeffrey Allen Mays. There came a day when all the heavenly host were gathered in their ranks. They moved forward in ceaseless mirth, their wings dazzling of white gold, ethereal robes flowing, faces shining, a great backdrop of spirits whispering and watching. Before them the captains went, four abreast in glorious array. Gabriel, chamberlain of the guard, keeper of the seven bowls, archmuse of the trumpeters of the Lord. Michael, high general of the armies of the Lord, wielder of the sword and shield of power, kinsman of the Lord's anointed. And Lucifer, marshal of the lanterns of the seven graces, and bearer of the seventh lantern, that of the eternal light of reason, which is fixed upon a long staff and ever held aloft by him in joyous honor. And with them, fitted in his mason's apron, carrying also a hammer and tools in his belt, strode the architect most glorious. The architect brought them all forth to behold the deep, standing lightly at its edge, appraising the new field of space. They marveled at its vastness, the expanse of abyss, perfectly dark, but fresh and pregnant like an empty canvas. Michael was the first to speak. "Lucifer, Gabriel, can either of you conceive its measure? Look over there, Michael. See, the boundaries for the east side are staked out with flags." "Yes, I see. And the other stakes over there must be for the western boundary, though the distance is well nigh to infinity." "Quite a wonder," said Lucifer. "I'm speechless. Really, I'm sure I don't know what to make of it." "My lord," said Gabriel, "you have excelled even the measurements that were shown in the foreplanning. A nearly unfathomable expanse it is." "Unfathomable indeed. Such a surplus of space," continued Lucifer. "What will you put in all this unoccupied territory? It's certainly more than we can use. All of the heavenly host could not fill its lengths." The architect listened to their comments and with a smile turned them all again to face the deep. The myriad angels behind them fell to a reverent hush as something seemed about to happen. With a cry that rent the black void, the architect said, "Light!" Then they witnessed a cataclysmic burst that engulfed the deep and filled its reaches with energy and matter. An understanding dawned upon the captains, and they grasped the idea of the architect that was now before their eyes, a physical plane, more than one, new dimensions of space now teeming with an array of particles occupying location, vibrating with their new and glistening existence, rejoicing in their own reality, illustrating before the eyes of all the host the undreamt glory of this shining material firmament. "Magnificent! Look at them all! How joyous they are! How they dance and sing! And see how they commune together! Behold, they are quickly gathering into groups, the greater masses gathering in their communities while the smaller ones orbit by the architect's decree." "Sir," said Lucifer, taking special thought about the light and its meaning, "this is truly a delight to us all. But I especially am humbled and gratified, I, whose name means light-bearer, that you have made a new kind of light to inhabit this space. May its radiance never end." "What a thought, old friend!" Gabriel put his arm around Lucifer's shoulder. "These lights of this firmament, bearing testimony to the holy keep of reason entrusted to your stewardship in this lantern of graces that you hold here, I, the divine spark of enlightenment, symbolized in these blazing bodies. Congratulations on this honor, light-bearer." "You are very kind." And then the architect motioned for them to follow, and they traversed the wide expanse, and the untold numbers of particles and quanta of energy continued to coalesce into bright, flaming stars. The captains marveled at the complexity of the fabric of space. The architect disclosed to them the hidden warp and woof, such that spirals of star clusters formed from the legions of flaming orbs. They gaped as immense structures of matter and energy, structures so massive that their minds could scarcely comprehend them, settled into well-designed and regular patterns of circular motions, galaxies swirling, stars following their courses in and around the vortex of galaxies, and planets revolving in their turn around suns, lesser satellites, even with smaller orbits, and this sequence repeated countless times across the face of the deep, so recently formless and void. "Where does he lead us now?" said Gabriel with a jest, and the others pressed on together, glad of heart. The architect led through the expanse of the universe as through a museum of wonders, moving timeless through this new matrix of time, and dimensionless through the new dimensions of space, flexible, textured with dips and humps and holes. They followed him with many stops and starts as visions of interstellar wonders caught and held their attention. Other phenomena appeared as they proceeded toward the location to which he led them. Gas clouds that refracted and diffused starlight in delightful, turbulent mixtures. Supernova that released such violence that they hesitated to marvel at the sheer magnitude. Clots of heavy matter that created folds and distortions of space and drew all matter and energy to themselves. Afterward, despite many distractions and layovers, the captains and the great company of angels arrived at one particular planet, a cooling glob of dirt and steam. The architect indicated his special interest in this place, multiplying the astonishment of the other captains. Then the architect spoke new words that the others soon deciphered when they saw the effects they produced: water, land, day, night. And he seemed to appoint various functions and movements significant to this planet. He wrought on the muddy surface tides and seasons, weather patterns of hot and cold, wet and dry. The captains noted and affirmed the great engines of nature, grasping their operation and rejoicing at their fitness and their ever-churning design that made the planet a marvel of ceaseless movement and artistry. "Lo, how he turns his gaze hard upon this place," said Michael. "Indeed, he seems to have set the very banner of his heart upon it," replied Lucifer. They drew near, and with zealous inquiry, they touched the water, unlike anything they had ever known. And they grasped handfuls of the rich loam, studying its color, the grains of soil ripe with elements and chemical compounds of such complexity and intricacy that the awe that they felt beholding the galaxies was matched by their astonishment at the care and design of the architect, with even the minutiae of each speck of dust in this obscure terrestrial landing. Then, after much time and contemplation of all the aspects of what the architect had made, Michael addressed his companions. "Friends, I now discern the purpose of these works, which you no doubt have also found." "Indeed," said Gabriel, "they bear testimony every moment to the architect. They join with yonder heavenly chorus in manifesting his mind and ingenuity. But they do it with other voices, voices of thunder, or of the volcano, of rushing water, but also with silent light in our eyes that sings to our souls of his own joy and industry." "Cousins," said Lucifer, "hear a new thought. Do you not get the impression that he designed all of this realm to be sought after, plumbed, mined, as it were, of its treasures to the joy of the intellect? It seemed to give up its secrets willingly to the inquiring mind. It obeys patterns and exhibits its own order such that the reasoning minds as ours may apprehend it. It seems especially suited for our contemplation. it submits to modeling and categorization. And from the vantage of this tiny planet, our eyes may inspect the material heavens and calculate the movement of innumerable bodies of light and fluctuations of space. We can also delve into the myriad properties of water and soil.
"Well said, sir," replied Michael.
"Clearly he does not create these things for their own end, but that seeing greater wonders we may know him all the better and admire the workings of his mind." The architect signaled for them to draw closer and watch, for his work was not yet complete. With more new words, he summoned a shocking new type of creation. Plants of every sort sprang from the ground, a variety such that the captains reeled at the diversity of forms, tens and hundreds of thousands of species, each unique and each bearing seed after its own kind, filling the earth with an untold spectrum of plant life. They marveled anew at the many colors that dappled the wide green foundation, from tiny green algae of only a few cells to thickly trunked trees that made a canopy overhead. It seemed as if the architect had no limit to the forms and designs his imagination could conjure, one after another, again and again, sprouting form after original form of plant life. The captains rushed into the fray of leaves and stems bursting forth from the ground. The heavenly host rejoiced in song, and the captains stood among the grandeur, overwhelmed. These new creatures, lovely as they were, had the principle of life and procreation within them, taking sustenance from the day star, from waters above and below, and finding nutrient in the soil. They multiplied and begat derivative life. In some cases, thousands of new spores and seeds and saplings springing from a single plant, so that in a short time the earth was adorned in life-bearing foliage. But not all saw this new turn as advisable.
"My lord," said Lucifer, his hands politely folded, "I appreciate your artistry and the workmanlike way in which you have brought all this about, but is this the best course? Will you indeed give to mere terrestrial constructs the most holy virtue of life?
Far be it from me to question you, but is not life a spiritual virtue, and its domain that of spiritual realms in which we dwell? Your generosity is great, to be sure, but I do not understand your rationale, your surprisingly realigned priorities, that you would make the dirt and water to be host to the life principle, the divine property that you have heretofore graciously placed only in your heavenly ones." The architect smiled a mysterious smile, and a wildness of exultation showed in his eyes that seemed not to acknowledge Lucifer's comments. And he gestured for them all to turn and face again the hills and plains, the mountains and seas. Joyful satisfaction arose on his countenance, and he burst into laughter at the success of the new thing that he had done, that life should adorn this material plane in this humble flora. And when he had recovered himself, before the captains had had a chance to catch their breath from what had already happened, a new light appeared in his eye.
"My lord," said Michael, "what more can there be?"
This time a tiny buzzing sound began all around them, and it grew stronger, and the soil began to writhe. Gabriel reached down and picked up a creature from the soil, which would later come to be known as a beetle, and it crawled in his hand.
"Fantastic," he whispered,
eyes wide, feeling the strength quaver in his legs.
"This one has an even greater life principle, surviving outside the dirt, having no roots, and being mobile to move across the surface of the earth."
"Look," said Michael with a gasp. To the devastation of all, they beheld the water teeming with life. The captains stood stunned and breathless.
and the heavenly host broke their ranks, some swooning and others struggling to hold up their companions. When a flock of storks passed overhead, all mayhem broke out among the angels. A chorus of frogs emerged from the waters and began to croak and chirp. In a patch of trees, Gabriel pointed out four-legged animals lifting their heads from feeding on the plants. And the captains put their hands to their foreheads, and their mouths gaped, and the four-legged creatures went back to their chewing.
"It cannot be," said Lucifer. "Creatures that move over land and air and sea? Creatures in whom is the breath of life?"
"My lord," said Gabriel, "this last act causes my heart to break and to leap. What a marvel! They breathe. Look at them. They move. They have dark eyes that look out at us. This material plane is given cognizance in the mystery of animal comprehension. It is glorious. And the beauty of it, the stately forms, and if you will pardon the stammering of the awestruck, the nigh o'erweening ambition of your artist's expression hath left me cloven of heart. I shut my mouth."
"Fellow captains," said Michael solemnly, "hath not our Lord the right to do with what is his? He is life, and the author of life. It should not surprise us that he would find new ways to infuse life into ever more of his creation, that joy may abound and his holy purpose may be praised."
He continued, "What I struggle to apprehend, my lord, is the quality that our eyes behold of this new beastly nature. It is fearsome and unexpected how the living creatures exist in such turmoil. I notice how you have ordained here a mysterious hierarchy by which the greater must survive by the conquest of the smaller. This one eats that one. The large consume the small. The worm eats the leaf, and the leaf must die. The bird eats the worm, and the worm must die. The tiger eats the deer. The wolf eats the rabbit. The greater fish eats the smaller fish. Your unsearchable purpose includes a violence that your holiness must therefore encompass, but it is fearsome in our eyes."
Lucifer spoke again. "Lord, I am bolder to speak than my fellows, knowing your magnanimity and grace. But in this last act, I find that you have exceeded the bounds of propriety. What began as a display of power and zeal has now devolved into mere spectacle. These creatures lope around, honking and braying, filling the air with their inarticulate doggerel. Why? Why? When you have the majestic choirs of all heaven to sing your praise, do you require these clumsy beasts? But more to the point, it is simply unseemly and a desecration of the holy grace of animating life to mingle it in a beast's flesh. I beg of you to recant this last movement and content thyself with the glowing orbs and mute bodies of thy original intent. Destroy these crude beasts immediately and set thy heart on more noble things above."
As the architect heard these words, his body and expression were a mysterious convergence of emotion, comprehension, and foreknowing, encompassing all joy and all sorrow, as if the whole horizon of destiny were displayed there in his visage, as if eternity heretofore, heavenly bliss, order, peace, love, and communion were somehow at a point of turning, a thing that had never happened before. Lucifer saw that his pleas would not move the architect, and that he had rather sounded the first note of discord ever heard among the heavenly hosts. Nevertheless, he maintained his resolve, and all retreated to a time of solitude, moving among the new world pulsing with thick growth and of energy. They each fell to contemplation and silence. The day star was replaced in the heavens by the keeper of the night, and all through the dark hours the captains and the great host kept watch, and the new earth and its creatures wrangled and roiled all the night long in brutish restlessness. Gabriel played softly on a harp of 12 strings and led the heavenly chorus in a grim and meditative chanting. Michael strolled solemnly around, troubled in his heart over the breach that had arisen. He continued in meditation until, whether due to distraction or to relieve his mind from the pang of grief, he began to stack stones, one upon another. In a little time, he had built a wall, suitable for an enclosure of a garden. Inside, he dressed some foliage and flowers, trimming and pruning, and he gathered some trees with rich fruits and lush leaves into a lovely bower with a garden near a conjunction of waterways. And Lucifer stood a sentinel the night long at a cliff's edge with the staff and lantern atop, holding the divine light, and he illumined the land and the faces of the angels with its glow. As the day star rose in the morning, the captains and angels wept at the beauty of the refraction of sunlight through thick atmosphere and clouds, like a great king emerging from its chamber. The architect also watched with satisfied solemnity and gravity. His eyes were bright with the mysterious, renewed mirth, unpredictable and troubling to every spirit being for its unfettered, intrepid potential. His terrestrial form glistened and pulsed with a low humming energy, with boldness, brazen with purpose, wildness, and audacity. The captains beheld his posture, the fierce zeal that was at once exalting and alarming and dangerous. A new light around him shone, yet another kaleidoscope manifestation of glory none yet had beheld. The heavenly host trembled, restless, sensing that he would lay them all low with an even greater, unimaginable exercise of artistic exploit beyond reckoning. When the sun was overhead, the architect drew the captains near. He put his hands on their shoulders. He also bid the angels draw near, for what he had to say was for them too. They huddled near and listened when he raised his hand in gesture to speak. "Let us make man in our image." The heavenly host suppressed a gasp and looked at one another in wonder, uncertain what this meant. None spoke. They only trembled with a sensation as if they stood on the brink of a new era in which the uniform and timeless history of the heavenly realms and all that had ever been were changing. This, they reflected, was what this whole adventure had been for. He was going to do the unimaginable, the unthinkable, and it was theirs to grow into, to prepare for, to participate in, and to overcome their reservations. His art was outlandish, controversial. The angels took up a five-toned hymn of preparation. The captains watched him and looked at one another. At last, Gabriel and Michael drew up their heads and with an august smile of concurrence, nodded to him. Lucifer's face was drawn in horror as he quietly withdrew and stood apart. None knew exactly what the architect meant by the word man, but Lucifer, searching for words, struggled as the full import of the proposal was manifest. The architect made man from dust and clay, as the stories tell. Male and female, he made them. And he took the lantern that Lucifer held, and from it he removed a portion of its fire. And returning, he placed it within each breast, and the light of the divine image filled their bodies. And the architect laid his hand on their heads and blessed them. And then the architect rejoined the captains, who stood before him in absolute stupefaction. "It is very good, is it not?" They returned his gaze with a look of silent affirmation, full of honor and worship. But Lucifer could no longer hold his peace. "Good, you say? No, 1,000 times no. What is this that you have wrought? What is this thing, this holy horror that you have made? I must express my dismay to you, and more. I was willing to go along with the early parts of this project, but this latest abomination cannot stand. It must be destroyed. I beg of you, immediately destroy it. You have given animation to dirt, and grime and filth mingled with the refuse of the other beasts of this field. You have taken our golden keep, our prize, the rational soul that belongs to spirit, not to flesh, and you have mingled it in a base and unworthy medium. This is an affront to all spirit beings. You must see that. These sacks of meat will do deeds like the shining ones on high. This carrion will measure the stars. Infleshed gore will speak with the tongues of angels. And this shambling, stinking white will make music. Nothing will be beyond its reach with the light of understanding that you have bestowed. I beg you to reconsider, annihilate the monster at once, for a monster it is, a violation and a horror, an insult to us all. Yes, my friends, all ye bright spirits, hear me, each one of you. In this man-creature, he has been reckless. Each one here knows it. This pillar of flesh standing upright, this sod-wrought soul, it is but dust, subject to the demands of table and toilet. Will you place the heavenly grace of rational mind in a clay vessel? Will you bury it under hair and sweat? By this movement, you bring us all into the dirt. And for what? Do you respect no propriety? Will you consummate your previous indiscretions in this last betrayal of the natural boundaries of spirit and matter? I cannot abide it. The architect was silent and grim, and Lucifer saw his resolution and continued, "If you will not at once rectify this violation, if you will choose and cling to this murky jack of clay over one who has served you for eons past, then you leave me no choice. I can no longer keep my place as the bearer of eternal light. Spurn me, do you? I know you not, for your counsels today are become corrupt. Further, I will renounce you and will henceforth be called your enemy. For you offend your own eternal laws of the very nature of spirit that we all bear. You injure your own kindred and bless a conglomeration of emulsified refuse. Ye millions, ye angelic host, you see what atrocity he has wrought. Come to me, those of you who know that I am right. Join me, and we will set right this mistake. For I see in his countenance that he will not recant. Very well, I make my departure. But mark my words. If you will not destroy this abomination, I will henceforth bend all my force to bring about its ruin, that the glory of these myriads of kindred spirits be not profaned." You have been listening to Nihilo, a short story by Jeffrey Alan Mays. Music is by Sarah Spring. If you've enjoyed this story and you'd like to hear more, please go to jeffreyalanmays.com and subscribe. Thank you for listening.